I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Queerly Beloved, a podcast from Broadly about the families we choose. I'm Sarah Burke.
And I'm Fran Tirado. So, Sarah, for this episode, you talked to Seth and Diana. Who are Seth and Diana?
They are two siblings who are 4 years apart, and they grew up in a small town in western Massachusetts. And they both first came out as gay and then later came out as trans.
It's so nice to have that shared experience with your sibling.
Yeah, but also they had super different experiences coming out and figuring out their identities. I think in part because they have extremely different personalities. Diana is the younger sibling, and she's kind of a diva. She's quick to express who she is and to make the world just deal with it. But Seth, on the other hand, is introverted and thoughtful and more reserved. So even though they grew up within the same family, their experiences of figuring out who they are were actually opposite in a lot of ways.
That's the thing I love about this story, is it illustrates that there's not just one way to be trans.
Yeah, absolutely. And it defies our assumptions about queerness and queer family in a lot of ways, I think, especially because throughout their lives, their family has supported them wholeheartedly the whole time through all their coming outs. And so it's not at all this traditional narrative of a queer person comes out and gets rejected by their family and then has to go out and find a queer chosen family.
Yeah, we talk a lot about chosen family, but these two were biological siblings. So it adds a whole new dimension to what that concept could actually be.
Yes, exactly. But even though they've been together for their whole lives, they've never fully sat down and reflected on how they've influenced each other's queerness and transness. So we invited them to do that.
When did you first learn about gay existence?
I mean, it was really far removed. You know, there wasn't anybody who was gay and out in my school when I was growing up.
I mean, I don't remember knowing anything about even gay culture.
I don't think I felt particularly bad about it until I, like, realized that other people were making fun of me or treating me differently. I think in a lot of ways I was expressing my true self or my true gender.
My name is Diana Tourge. I'm 29 years old. I'm a trans woman and a journalist. I live in New York City. Now your turn, Seth.
My name's Seth Tourge. I'm 33 years old. I am queer and trans non-binary, and I live in Providence, Rhode Island.
Gender and sexuality become so much more complicated once you get to adolescence and you're dealing with puberty and high school and things like that. How did your understanding of your identity start to shift around that time?
I mean, for me, it was like getting hit with a sack of bricks. I didn't really anticipate it to suddenly become so socially ostracized around this thing that I had no control over and I didn't know what it meant, but that seemed so obvious to everyone else, which was just that I was really feminine and that it was not normal for me because I was male. As soon as middle school began, I lost all of my male friends and I retained a few of my female friends.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I mean, I think it was actually really similar for me. As a little kid in elementary school, most of my friends were boys, my really close friends. Mm-hmm. And then I think once I got to middle school, almost immediately, I kind of didn't have those friends anymore. So yeah, middle school, similarly to Diana, was like pretty abysmal, I would say. I mean, maybe everybody shares that experience.
I think everyone does experience that in middle school, but like when you are gender nonconforming and trying to fit in and trying to avoid being bullied, like the looks get messy. You know, Seth had a blue braid in their hair. My attempts at passing as a normal boy were like buying the skin tight rib knit orange sweater from Old Navy that was like a muscle shirt that looked so feminine on me.
Or wearing a full tuxedo or something, you know?
That was like elementary school. I'm talking about middle school.
Oh, okay. Right. Yeah, middle school, that was like the point where I started to realize like, oh, like I'm getting bullied for the way that I appear or whatever, and I need to change. You know, I wanted to fit in more, so I started trying to appear more feminine, and I grew my hair, as Diana like kindly remembers. But it didn't help, you know, that's what I realized. It didn't help. And if anything, people could tell that I was trying or something, you know, I don't know.
Right, like it makes it worse when you try because they can see that you're a failure.
Yeah.
And so in the middle of all this, Diana, you actually came out as gay when you were quite young. How old were you?
Yeah, I mean, 11, 12. I don't remember exactly the age. I just remember that I was very young. It wasn't something that I did publicly because I was still telling kids who confronted me in the hallway every day at school asking me if I was gay. I still always told them no, but I knew that I was, at least at that time, the language that I had to understand my identity was gay. And so there came a point where I personally accepted it. What I did was I told our other brother, who didn't believe me at first, God bless him, and he like asked me who I thought was hot to try and prove it. Like, well, who's hot then? I was like, Brad Pitt. And he was like, that's an obvious answer. And I was like, he is hot. But eventually I convinced him that I was gay and he didn't care. But I, for some reason, was nervous to tell you, Seth, that I was gay. And I didn't actually directly tell Seth. I told a mutual friend of ours on AIM, AOL Instant Messenger.
Right. He promised not to tell me and then instantly told me, right.
Yeah, so you confronted me and you were actually angry at me for not telling you directly.
Really?
You were annoyed. It didn't last long, but I remember you being like, why wouldn't you just tell me? And I think in retrospect, I could come up with all kinds of reasons why maybe I didn't tell you, but the truth is I just don't really know. And it probably had to do more with our age difference at that time than anything.
Seth, how did it feel for Diana, you know, who's 4 years younger than you, to be the person to come out first?
Like, our relationship's interesting because I'm the older sibling. But then there was also this switch dynamic of Diana kind of like paving the road for me in different ways of like coming out as gay when she was 11 and then coming out as trans later, but still before I had like figured that out about myself. So I know that she's made that easier for me and she's made that something I could think about more directly. And it was great. It was great for me that she did that. And I like admire her the way that she has always been so like fearless about those things. She has always sort of come to those conclusions about herself a lot sooner than me. You know, we're kind of like, well, she's an Aries and I'm a Libra. So there's certain stereotypical traits there where it's like, could take me like 20 years to make a decision about something.
Zodiac.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. You know, it was like it started that conversation between us, but it started it in our family too. Were you ever like nervous about how I or other members of the family would react?
Didn't feel brave at the time to come out or anything like that because it felt like people had made me do it. And so I didn't have a choice not to. Like, if I could have hidden, I would, and I tried and failed. And my failure forced me out of the closet.
And what was it like as you got older?
Our teen years were so like difficult for both of us in different ways. You know, I feel like we were kind of disconnected.
Yeah, I wasn't really talking to anyone.
Yeah.
I was pretty much just biding my time till I could drop out of high school and very unhappy.
Do you remember when Seth came out and if that changed how close you two were or how alone you felt?
I remember we were in town and I was sitting on a bench. And I think you were just like, I have something to tell you. And I was like, duh. So obvious.
Yeah, that was the reaction of basically everybody that I told.
I mean, and it was cool for me to have an LGBT sibling, like, actually out and talking about it. You coming out definitely, I think, strengthened an already pretty solid relationship and maybe even gave some more context for why we were kindred spirits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we were both gender nonconforming but had never really talked about that. And, you know, this was a pretty clear thing that united us.
I think a lot of queer people feel like they have secret lives or like double lives sometimes, where they have their life where they live as their most authentic version of themselves and then they have the person that they present in front of their family. Did you feel like after Seth came out, you were able to kind of merge those things in new ways or share new sides of yourselves with each other?
No, because I was a Nelly queen since I was 12. Like, I was where my dad went to the movie theater with me for Christmas. I was like 13 years old, wearing knee-high patent leather boots from Payless and a floor-length coyote fur coat with a top hat. Like, he accepted me when I was the biggest freak in the world. And, like, I just didn't give a shit. So when you came out as gay, it didn't make me feel like I can be more me now. Because you already knew who I was. But I don't know if for you, maybe, it was different.
I mean, I think first and, like, biggest for me was that I could be more open with myself. Like, you know, I didn't always know that I was gay. You know, I was always like telling people I wasn't. You know, that's just the weird thing about people telling you what you are from a young age, is like you spend most of your energy telling them like, no, that's not true, but like you don't get a lot of space to kind of like decide what is true. When I came out as gay, you know, that was like an opening. And that was like something that opened up some part of me that I was like not allowing. And that felt really wonderful. I'm sure it meant that I could be more myself with the family too. But I didn't feel that as directly. It was more like something personal for me.
I think it's like really cliche, but for a reason, because it's true about like pride. You know, I mean, there's this thing that you're so ashamed of, and if you can get to a point in your life or in your community or your family where you can accept it and find pride in something that you've been taught by society to be ashamed of, it's got a profound impact on your whole life. Basically, you know, you came out as gay and then we were both gay. And it was several years later that the transgender awakening occurred.
The transgender awakening, yes.
When I came out as trans, I started remembering a lot of my childhood that I'd forgotten. And I don't think prior to adolescence, I had any feeling around gender because I looked like a little androgynous elf, like most kids do. I didn't hate my body. It was only once puberty hit and like my body started changing that I remember feeling depressed. I didn't know that you could change your gender or that gender was anything other than a biological prescription. Gay guys who I knew at my school were like, you look like a girl. And then straight guys were like, you're a boy. So I really felt like, well, this will be a life of loneliness and isolation if I'm my true self. I went through my parents' drawers and found my birth certificate to try and see if there was some mistake made on it, to see if perhaps I was born intersex. And if I was, then maybe something could be done to change my fate. I wouldn't have to live a male life. And when I determined I wasn't intersex, I gave up and resolved to live my life as masculine a boy as I could be, and then spent the next essentially decade trying to do that. Finally, when I was 23, I saw a photograph of Mia Isabella, a trans porn star, and I was mesmerized by her body, not even in a sexual way, but in an existential way. This beautiful woman with a penis. And I think what it did to me was show me an image of a kind of body that exists in the world. And it changed everything that I knew about the possibilities of sex and gender. And when I heard the word transgender, it immediately fell like dominoes in my life, everything falling backwards to the point where I realized, like, all those unanswered questions make sense now. I'm trans.
When I was a little kid, you know, I would ask like my parents or my aunt or grandmother, you know, when am I going to be a boy? Like I would ask them that often and they would say, well, you're not, you know. So even as a little kid, like, you know, I was thinking about gender and like feeling I wanted my gender to be something different. One of the things that I thought about a lot when I was trying to figure out, you know, what is my gender? What do I want it to be? Which wasn't really until I was in my 20s, was I like thought about the ways that, you know, when I would use a women's room, it's just like I would notice people like pause and like kind of look at me. It would be sort of like somebody's asking me my gender, you know, whether that's verbal or they're just like looking at me in this way. And I didn't have a good answer, you know, it was like, they would be like, oh, this is the women's room. And like, my response to that could be, well, I'm a woman. But actually, that never felt like something I wanted to say. You know, and it would be this thing for me of being like, well, why don't I know what to say in those situations? Eventually, I realized, well, the reason I don't know what to say in that situation is because the answer that they're looking for is not one that feels correct to me. And I talked to Diana about that eventually, you know, when I was starting to think more about my own gender and just like the insufficiency of those labels for me. You know, I always felt like I was something in between. To Diana's like deep frustration, it like takes me a very long time to make big decisions or figure things out.
They took like years. I was like, come on, hurry up. The second I figured out that I was trans, I acted on it immediately. I mean, I immediately did all the social media things I needed to do to alert the world to my new identity. But I also called my family like that day and told them that I'm transgender and I'm going to go on hormone replacement therapy and you can call me a woman from now on. I came out to Seth and I proceeded to figure out exactly what I wanted my transition to look like. But I knew for me that the immediate just meant allowing myself to dress and look the way that I wanted to, and to let go, to finally let go of this thing I never wanted, which was manhood. Because I always felt like I was insufficient and failing at being a man in some way or another. And to be able to say, actually, I am completely a failure at being a man. So much so that I'm a woman. And that is considered to be a binary transgender experience, you know, transitioning from male to female. And that is something I deeply identify with. But I think I identify more with the experience of being a male to female transgender person than I necessarily do with, you know, the term woman as a sort of singular idea. But Seth, your experience is a little different.
One time Diana called me a genderless energy field, and that felt really poignant. The way that I transitioned was not extreme, you know, it was pretty subtle. My physical appearance hasn't changed much. I've kind of always looked the way that I look, and I didn't want to like have an extreme physical change either. So like when I came out as gay, it was more internal. It was more about like what I was allowing myself to be and to like allow myself to say that to other people that yeah, I just feel not like non-binary really captures what, you know, my experience is. And so it was like allowing that to be something that was okay. Talking to Diana about that was helpful because, you know, she transitioned in a different way than I did. But also, I think we think about gender in similar ways, and we had conversations about it. And that was like really helpful to me in like articulating what I was feeling.
For me, I really wanted you to know that you didn't have to be fully a binary trans person in order to allow yourself to identify as trans, because I was worried that you might feel like, because I'd been trans and was really going through this more classical approach to body transformation, I was concerned that you might feel like you weren't able to tell me that you felt like maybe you were trans, because maybe that would offend me or something. And I don't know how much of that you felt, but I remember being aware of that and wanting to make sure you felt safe mm-hmm. and open enough to be able to explore that without thinking you were going to tread on my heels.
Yeah, yeah, that definitely made a big impact on me. I also love the idea that you are like a classical model here. I like that.
Diana, classical transsexual classic. Type A.
My physical experience was always a little bit fraught, and it was hard for me to like have the space to kind of like think about decisions about what I wanted to be or what I was. And Diana really helped me make a space for that, and like she really made that space for me of like, you know, she inspired me by you know, really loudly proclaiming all the time like that, like, here, this is what I am. And like that was like a way different approach than what I would have, but I also really admire it, and like I feel giving me that nudge was really important.
Do you remember what that conversation actually sounded like?
I don't know, Seth, maybe you can correct me, but I think it was more just coming out of conversations around gender, and maybe even me asking if you feel like you identify as trans.
I don't remember exactly what she said, but basically like...
I said, choose a side.
Yeah.
Or choose, get off one, the yeah. playing field.
I can kind of get obsessed about something and worrying and being like, I don't know, and just like fretting over it. And Diana will be like, listen, like, it doesn't really matter very much. And not in like a dismissive way, but in a way that I think is real, where it's like, well, you know, it's not like you're going to make the wrong decision. You just exist, and like, there's not a, like, right or wrong way to do it.
Listen, my name was Dragonfire for 2 months with Y's.
I remember that.
Two
remember
Y's. That. Yeah. So if my name could be Dragonfire with two Y's for 2 months, you can do anything.
It's incredible to see somebody change over so many years. You know, siblings, I feel like a lot of times that could be your longest relationship of your life,
especially when you think in retrospect, like when you really look at each other today and then think about who you were when you were young and what you thought about yourselves then. That's, you know, that perspective.
Yeah, and the ways you wouldn't have like imagined the way we would end up, you know, who knew that this would happen.
Definitely. Well, I'm grateful to have you as my sibling.
Me too.
Queerly Beloved is a production of Vice Media and Broadly. If you're liking the show, subscribe on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you listen. And please leave us a review. It helps other people find the show. This podcast was produced by Sophie Cazes. Production assistance was by Dan Richards.
and our theme music is by Tyler McCulley. But before you go, we want to share one last thing with you. We reached out to our Broadly readers for your stories about chosen family and queer icons, and we got some really amazing responses. If you want to leave us your story about chosen family, call our inbox at 707-412-8388, and your voicemail could be featured on Queerly Beloved. Thanks so much for listening.
Hi, Queerly Beloved. My name is Gus, and when I think of queer and chosen family, I think of my time in an LGBT youth housing program for homeless youth. I was there for a year and a half during the full 2 years that I was homeless after leaving my home due to transphobic violence from my mother. I entered that housing program very shortly after an abusive episode from my mother almost ended my life, and I felt very, very lost. I had always had a very fractured and confusing relationship with adults, some very positive and most very harmful. But what I found in the housing program was just a group of people who cared so much and supported us unconditionally. I have a lot of really beautiful memories of hanging out in the staff office of our little housing program, staying up late nights with the night staff, grocery shopping at Walmart down the street, and sharing music recommendations with the two night staff, both of whom I still love and am in contact with. In the day case managers, two young queer people who were not paid nearly enough for the many, many long hours they stayed at the program after they should have gone home. They were not out at bars with their friends. They were there settling petty disputes between people in the housing program, comforting us after a job loss and encouraging us to get back out there and keep trying. I can't ever express to any of them how grateful I am and how they completely turned my life around when I felt more lost and floating than I ever had. I hope that they know that they were incredibly influential in my life, and I hope that I was as much of a positive influence as they were.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.